Welcome to the podcast, Coping Kit for Everyday Life. I'm Rochelle Porter, and I'm here with my friend and dear colleague, Genevieve Lowry.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to our podcast. We're super excited to get this started. And Rochelle, I'm so excited to be doing this with you. We did spend a lot of time thinking about what to call our podcast. We wanted something that would speak to our child life people, but also something that connected to the larger community.
Yes, and that's where we came up with Coping Kit for Everyday Life. These days, we can really use a bag of tools to really help us deal with the both ordinary and extraordinary things that happen in our lives. We are hoping that our podcast is going to want you to want to share with us and learn more about how you can create your own coping kit by us sharing with you all the different conversations that Genevieve and I have had over the years, and really talking about how we use our child life skills to support children and families, ourselves, and each other. Welcome, everyone, to Coping Kit for Everyday Life. And today we're going to talk about the topic of faith. And I am really excited that we have a guest today. So we have Jennifer joining us, and she's a chaplain, and she's going to really share her work in the healthcare field as a chaplain and really just talk about today about how faith can be a part of our coping kit. So welcome, Jen, to our podcast.
Welcome. It's so exciting to have you here today. I'm really excited for this conversation because I think there's so many intersections with faith and healthcare, and yet so often it's not something that we always talk about in our professional spaces.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, I do, but the rest of us don't.
So absolutely, because I think about like when I started as a child specialist, it was kind of like there had to be a separation. Like, you know, we shared with our audience already that, you know, I'm a Christian woman and faith is a part of who I am. And I think, you know, we talked about our purpose in doing the work that we do. And I feel like child life was a God-given purpose for me to help people. And I think that's one way that I do it. However, I feel like I was taught, like, you kind of don't talk about religion when it comes to work, where I found that in healthcare, I learned early on, it's kind of hard not to talk about faith or spirituality when you're caring for patients and families, because if you're treating the entire family, you can't leave out a part of them if you want to understand about their experience and how to support them and also like what helps them to cope. So for me, I learned early on, it's like, you know, faith, spirituality is something that many families utilize for their coping, be it with their illness, a new illness, or be it with pain or whatever they're experiencing when they're in the healthcare. And I think I learned that, okay, like, how do you make sure that you do actually include that? And then also how families feel comfortable that they can speak to you about it. Because I know for me, I felt uncomfortable. So I wouldn't even bring it up at first. So if I'm uncomfortable to even bring this up to you as a child or a patient as a child or an adult as a caregiver, then how do you feel comfortable even sharing with me, like, this is a part of, you know, who I am and part of, you know, how I cope. So Jennifer, I'm curious, like, just really, if you want to share with the audience, like, what made you decide to be a chaplain? What brought you to this path?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When you were talking, I was thinking about how hospitals and healthcare is this intersection of science and humanity. Mm-hmm. Not that those are two separate things, but we tend to think there's either like the storytelling human part of life, or there's the scientific factual part of life, you know, and it's this place where humans come with their messy stories to ask science to help. And that can have a clash of like, I think of it as like the clash of the titans. Like there's this science god and there's this more metaphysical, philosophical, spiritual concept of God, and they get into fights in the hospital. I used to be more of like I had a naturopath and not a Western medicine doctor. And I did yoga teacher training and much more on the natural side of things. And then I had a health diagnosis that really needed Western care. It needed an immediate response and it wasn't going to be taken care of through enough herbs or whatever it was that I was putting my faith in before. And my naturopath actually said, you need to do both. You need to go to the hospital and let the doctors do their thing. And then we will care for you through your regular things that you put your trust in, the natural side of things. And it was through that experience that I actually had an experience with a nurse who, when I was having a freak out moment during my treatment, she just came over and held my hand and was very gentle, but actually kind of firmly said, like, okay, you need to calm down now. And there was something about the fact that there was somebody there to help ground me, but also bring the tenderness. And I realized, I don't know what she did nursing wise. I just know that she took care of me, but she was there with me in that moment. And she was the only one who really focused in on what my actual experience was. And I realized that that's what I wanted to do for people. And I started my journey to becoming a chaplain after that.
What a great story. What really resonated for me in that story was where you started, really, also was this idea of this clash between the science and the faith, right? Like that these two things, and yet in order for the science to work, we also have to have faith in that, right? Mm-hmm. We have to have faith in those that administer it. We have to have faith in ourselves, in our bodies to receive it, to heal, right? We have to have faith in our body's ability to heal. Like there is like this such a intertwining of these ideas and connection to both of those ideas. And I just love the way that you really framed it, because it makes so much sense to me to think of it that way also, like that we're looking for these hard and fast rules and this something that says this will work. This is accurate. This is this. And yet faith is a little bit more ambiguous, a little bit more wishy-washy. You know, the outcomes are not always what we expect or anticipate them to be. And yet we still have faith and believe in something that to be able to even just move forward. And then the presence of that nurse, really the embodiment of both of those things, right? Like the person who says, I'm holding this space for you, right? And that's a very spiritual idea and a contemplative practice, right? To say, I'm holding this space for you to be, but also is grounded in the science of you need a nurse.
I'm here to do a job. Yeah. You need someone to tend to you right now.
Yeah, it's really powerful. I'm wondering if you've found yourselves, like, are there situations? It's interesting because I think about when I worked in the hospital and families, you know, there was always this sort of separation between the medical piece and the faithful piece. So like, oh, they're a religious family. Somebody call the chaplain. Right? Or somebody call the rabbi, or somebody call, you know, the chaplain's office and make a referral for the family, or, oh, it's end of life, let's make a referral for the family, right? Like there were these very specific moments or groups of people that fell into that category where it was, instead of it being like more threaded throughout, right? I mean, do you feel like you're being sort of relegated this role in this position? And, or I'm hoping, I haven't worked in a hospital setting now in a number of years, so I'm hoping maybe it's being more purposefully threaded as part of the family-centered care that everybody gets the opportunity for this, as opposed to people who have identified themselves as, I would like to see A or...
Right. A. Yes. I definitely still get the referrals that are, chaplain, will you go see this person? They have a Bible on their bedstand. And it's, okay, yeah, that is absolutely a referral based on a very tangible piece of information. And then what I try and work on with the units that I cover, so I build a relationship with my nurses and physicians, is that they can trust nurses and physicians and child life and anyone who's in the hospital setting is a human and can trust their insights and their wisdom as a person. And so if you find yourself saying something like, oh, I'm at my wit's end with this person, there's no hope for them, they're just frustrating, you know, that's one example where that person might be in spiritual or existential distress. And what that nurse is saying isn't like, I'm at the end of my compassion. They're saying, I'm at the end of what I can do for this patient. And that is a great referral. Yeah, I think of it as integration with the care. Like the way that I actually integrate is different than a lot of chaplains. And that's that I don't actually usually do a ton of reading up on the medical situation that a person is in before I walk in the room. I walk in the room and I let them guide me through their journey, their adventure, their mystery. To me, they're a completely new story that I'm getting to know when I walk in there. So I don't like to have in my mind any medical terminology to explain. And this is, chaplains are different. Other chaplains might really want to know what's happening medically. But I'm the one person in the hospital whose entire role isn't medical. You know, like chaplains, our training isn't a medical class and theology. It's theology or whatever a particular training is. And so I really like to go in and just be present to whatever shows itself, whether that's need for celebration, need for end of life care, need for processing an existential moment. And also for the nurses and doctors and everyone else there, that they're all completely different people in their journeys with their career, with their faith, with their outside lives, you know? And so I try and just come totally open to working with the staff on how integrated they feel with spirituality and faith. And I know this is a little bit of an abstract answer, but I think for me, the integrating and like having that web connected is, I start with being open, you know, with how do we open the boundaries and draw the circle wide enough that like whatever you're bringing, staff or family or patient, we can work with it and see where it takes us.
I like what you say, that whole thing of being open, I think, and just really being also sort of like we said earlier, like being in the moment with that family and where they are. And then see, you know, see where the journey takes you. Because I think if you come in with a set idea, well, this is what I'm going to do, that may not be what the family needs. And I often wonder, too, is like, how often do we actually do that with families? Because we are focusing on the medical. So there are some things that there is, like, we got to do A, B, or C because we're treating A, B, or C, where you're coming in a different way of like, I'm going to be open to see what you need. And then just figure out what that is instead of coming in with certain assumptions of what needs to be done. But I wonder if I would believe that families really value that because everything, that's not always the case that someone's coming in openly to just see how they can support you versus coming in specifically with the goal already set.
Exactly. Yeah. I think because it can be that the staff are trying to integrate faith and asking like, how is their faith affecting this particular medical decision that they're making? But it might just be that like, they need to know where the chapel is, or they need to know where they can get a prayer rug. And yes, it's very integrated with their medical care because their faith is very integrated with anything they go through in life. And so sometimes those really tangible things end up being the things that are overlooked because we are trying to integrate so much. And so really it's just going in and being the person that says, I'm here for everything that isn't medical. What do you need? And in usually more words than that. And they'll tell me, they'll tell us what they need. And if we can make it happen, we will. And that can be so many different things.
I would think also that those tangible things though are great entry points. Right? Like when someone does say, oh, there's a Bible on the bedside table, or they're looking for a prayer rug, or they were asking about services, right? Like that those do become tangible ways to enter into conversation with people who identify also as faithful. But then there's that other group of people who may not identify themselves as necessarily like, oh, I don't need a chaplain to come visit, right? And I think that, you know, your approach to this of being very much sort of like, listen, I can be whatever you need me to be, right? I can just be the person who you tell your story to. And then from that, you know, I can pull things from. I'm wondering, what are some of the, maybe there's some more contemplative or spiritual practices that don't, I don't want to identify things as like reading scripture is religious, this is this. But I would think that there are some who may not respond to, can I pray with you? Can I read your Bible with you? But may respond to other more contemplative practices that they may appreciate. And I'm wondering, I mean, you said you worked with yoga and things like that. Are those some of the tools that you also bring in and that you have found families responding to?
Yeah, I don't remember what the number is right now. I should know. But the spiritual, but not religious group in America is like, it's the fastest growing spiritual group. And that doesn't necessarily include that tiny slice of people in the hospital who are scientific atheists, you know? I do think that there is a spirituality even to folks who have that perspective. But for the most part, people have something that they feel is an intangible thing that they feel connected to inside of them or outside of them, you know, something that they can't really define and they would point to as spiritual. So that's every human. And so something that really changed for me was working during the pandemic. I realized, and I've talked about this before with some of my staff, is that the one thing that we all have is a body. So any practices that I can do with people that help us feel more connected to self, our mind, our body, our heart, our experience, we're all mammals, some creative mind, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we all have a way of getting into our own experience. So if I go inward and listen to myself and that brings me to a Buddhist place, then that's the thing that might work for me. If I go inwards and it takes me to Protestant God, then that's what is going to work for me. If I go inward and I find my ancestors, I think each person, like we carry in our body and our bones and our DNA and our psyche, the things that we need to make sense of life. And so I do a lot of somatic exercises where I have people just reconnect with their body, either through breath or something called the butterfly hug, which is like a way of centering oneself in their experience. And then from there, that's a launching point into what wisdom do you have already? Like what lives inside of you? What is helping you through this? People might not understand that language, so they might understand it. Like one time I was talking to a woman about sovereignty, finding her sovereignty, and she had had her eyes closed and she opens up one eye during this prayer and she goes, God's sovereignty. And I was like, yes, ma'am. We were talking about God's sovereignty because she was finding her power and her strength, but she couldn't like divorce that from like God being the sovereign one in her life. And so we switched immediately, like mid prayer, to her language and to her source of strength, which was looking externally to a God who guides her. Whereas for others, they might like look inward and think, because of my roots, because of this history, because of this family connection, because of my partner being on the ocean, these are the things that get me through. So I really try and guide people back to themselves because I think each of us has what we need. And it's a matter of figuring out how to trust it and to know that we already have it.
And I think that that is so important for us as each one of us lives out our lives, right? Regardless of whether we're in the hospital or whether we are healthy and moving about the world, that we think about the ways in which that we connect to each other, to the earth, to ourselves, to whatever it is that we feel keeps us grounded and present in the moment, or we derive that strength from, that those are things that we can really look to, not only in times of stress or adversity or challenge like illness, but also throughout our lives. And by creating practices that help us hone those, or it's very similar to child life, right, Rochelle? Like when we think about, when we talk to kids, we want to do it during non-threatening times, right? We want them to develop the coping tools when they're not in the middle of the preparation, when they're not in the middle of the procedure, but before it, or pull from something that they know already so that we're drawing on skills that they've got. And this is very similar. This idea that you have all this stuff within you and that it should be worked on daily or at least regularly. I don't want to put pressure on people, but to recognize that they're there always, not only when you're faced with a challenge, but they are there always. And that actually we can strengthen those resources that are within ourselves or that are around us through practice and through practice them. And so I'm curious about, what are your practices for yourself?
Yeah. I was raised Protestant Christian. My dad is a pastor. My family was missionaries. I went to seminary. I was very devoted in that tradition and for probably the first 3/4 of my life. And then life kind of started to fall apart. And Kenneth Pargamit, I think is his name, has this theory of like spirituality and crisis points where we hit crisis points in life and we either turn toward the resources that we've always known, or we look at those resources and we say, wait a second, this isn't doing enough for me. This isn't meeting the need that is arising due to this crisis. And I think that's what happened with me at that point. And I started looking more toward feminine spiritualities and looking away from the patriarchal religions, which spoke of a man god, and more into the feminine traditions, which includes like different spiritualities from around the world, different types of shamanism, earth-based spirituality. And I really got rooted in those. So for me, that includes going into the forest and having circles or times with fellow like-minded people who we connect with the earth while we do a meditation and seek out our resources. And for me, it's really being outdoors that will get me reconnected. I will often just take off my shoes and go stand in the yard outside and just be
connected. Earthing.
Exactly.
Earthing.
And that makes my nervous system feel settled immediately. And then I can start to think about like processing what I'm going through and engaging my creative side. And then I found recently that all I want is to listen to old hymns, to listen to this one band called Shane and Shane who do like worship music. And so I'm surprising myself right now when this thing that I was raised with wasn't working for me. I was feeling pretty oppressed by the religion of my childhood and upbringing. And now that I have found more practices that feel resonant in my body, my soul, then I think I'm starting to welcome back in the old, just the, you know, saying a prayer, yeah. Maybe even going to church someday soon, singing those songs that have a place in my neural pathways and that bring me comfort. And it's been a relatively difficult season. And all I want is those old worship songs from the 90s, you know, and
love it.
So yeah, I'm open to welcoming back in those old practices from a place of safety in my new practices, if that makes sense.
You're repurposing them. You're updating them. The old hymns are new again through a different voice and through a different tempo.
Right? Yeah.
Oh,
it was a story.
I think what resonates with me too is like, it's a journey, you know, and different parts of times in your life, certain things serve you in different ways. So it's not a surprise that, you know, like you said, like how, you know, that has something within those hymns brings comfort to you. So that's the great thing about it, is that you can have that. And then you can also, you know, like you said, you know, shamanism and being with nature and the earthiness, like all of that. I think the whole question is really figuring out within oneself the things that we have within us that reconnect us to that, you know, whatever that is, whatever gives us that meaning in life. And I think sometimes labels and defining, and I think sometimes we get lost in that, to where I think what I liked about what you said is like really going within yourself and figuring out what has that meaning to you, and taking that and creating that for yourself. I think oftentimes it has to be so black and white. And I think when you look at spirituality, it isn't black and white. Like, it's so vast and different. And I think also depending on where we are in our lives, like, you know, where I am now at my middle age, I guess we'll say we are now. And like, stop making faces. I feel like, you know, even for me, like my faith has changed and how I look at things in a different way. Because I know for me, I did struggle, you know, because it was raised in a Christian home and you have to go to church and you have to do this and you have to do that. That for it was a long time, I actually pushed it away because I felt like it was forced on me. And then I had to kind of, you know, go full circle. I went through a divorce. And I think that's when I went back and really looked at my faith, because I needed something to kind of help me cope with and figure out like, okay, you know, what is this? What's happening? And, you know, how do I want to live my life now? And what has meaning to me? And then I came back on my own terms and I had my own journey, my own experience, not based on the journey that was kind of my parents, you know, wanted to instill in me, which is great. I think it's something important that you want to have that foundation for your children. I do believe in that. But I also believe then you have to step away as a parent and let your kid, you know, find their journey, because it has to have meaning to you. Your faith can't be based on what your mom believes or your dad or your community. It has to be like what Rochelle believes or what Jennifer believes or what Genevieve believes. I think that's so important.
I agree. I think my takeaway from this conversation today is also that sort of that faith is what you need it to be in whatever moment you're in, right? And that we have these foundations and these journeys that we're on, and that those things at different points in your life, as Rochelle said, feed your soul in different ways, and that you gravitate towards what's going to work for you and support you in your life. Jennifer, you and I have very similar backgrounds, interestingly enough. I am also a PK. I'm a preacher's kid. My parents also, my father worked for Church World Service, so lived overseas for a number of years. You know, was raised in a church, grew up going to church every Sunday, and we prayed even when we went out to eat at McDonald's or, you know, wherever we were. And, you know, now I am still part of the same church, but sort of it looks different now than it did then. And so there's much more contemplative practice, much more appreciation for the earth and the spirit and the mind and the body and those connections. And so those are the practices that I have incorporated into my faith and into my spirituality. And I think that that's really important to think about the evolution and how our faith evolves as we evolve, right? And the willingness to evolve, I should say, not get stuck in dogma of the church. That's really important. So to you now, what are your takeaways from this conversation?
I think it's an obvious one that I'm just hearing again or readdressing again. And that's that if we had time to sit down and talk for a period of time with every single person who we work with or have worked with, we would get this rich history like we've gotten from us here today. And we would get to know so much more richness. And it is in the hospital, in the healthcare setting sometimes, that you have to pretend like that's not a part of you. And I just feel this like honor that I get to listen to your stories, and then a wish that I can get to hear everyone's stories in the hospital, and that it wouldn't be something that we would be afraid of, because it's so beautiful and rich. That's my take.
Beautiful. Well said. Well said. So we'd like to ask our listeners to reflect upon, to journal about how their faith or spirituality supports them in a challenge. What are their spiritual practices, or to consider developing one? I would also like to add, for those child life specialists out there, or for those that are working in healthcare settings, that if you are a person of faith, that is part of who you are and what you also bring into your work, and to find ways that feel comfortable and safe for you to do that in those spaces, and to really think about, as opposed to creating the separations that I felt as a young child life specialist and that Rochelle referred to also, but to really think about what are the ways that I can bring that into my work or even into my own as part of your self-care. This has been a wonderful conversation and really thought-provoking and really thoughtful. And I just really, it's been so lovely, Jennifer, having you here and meeting you. This is our first time meeting, and this has just been really a wonderful time. I feel grounded just after having this conversation. And I've had a very difficult week this week.
So it was meant to be.
Yes, it was. It's worked out perfectly. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's been really, really lovely.
Thank you.
So thanks everyone for joining us for Coping Kit for Everyday Life. And I really challenge you to see how faith can be part of your coping kit. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today for our episode of Coping Kit for Everyday Life. We hope you take away something from this podcast that sparks your imagination, or you discover a new tool for your coping kit. Remember to check out our resources and exercises in today's podcast notes. We would love to hear from you. Please share your comments, questions, or suggestions for future shows. You can find our emails in our podcast notes. Look forward to hearing from you.